Due to technical problems, the first 7 minutes of this show was lost.
And when you have thousands of computers attacking one computer, that's a very effective attack. That's called a denial of service attack.
And that can affect more than just the actual user that actually had the security breach?
That's right. When I was working for the intelligence community, there was an attack that was planned on the White House. And luckily, we found out about it a few days ahead of time, and the White House was able to protect against it. But what had happened was that hundreds of thousands of businesses and individual users had inadvertently had this software placed on their machines, and on a given date, that trigger date, that software was going to start attacking the White House website.
So when you're saying attacking the website, the White House, you are talking about the website itself. So what's the real danger of a whole bunch of machines taking that website down?
There was no real danger other than the fact that you wouldn't be able to get to it, and anybody working on that network wouldn't be able to get out. So it's like having all the telephone lines busy on Mother's Day. It's extremely frustrated, and it can hamper your
productivity.
Right. By attacking each of these computers, would be sending out thousands of requests to the website, and when you put all of those machines together, basically does it take the website down, or does it just keep
it could take
users?
It down.
Oh, okay.
Imagine trying to drive to work if the highways were full of bad traffic every moment.
I just want to put in perspective that when we're talking about, well, normally when we're talking about any kind of network security, we're not talking about the loss of life. We're talking about the loss of data, and that, of course, is important in a, you know,
sometimes
system
data,
of ours.
Sometimes data is life critical, actually.
Yeah, I guess it could
yeah.
be.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if you're hacking the 911 system, you could kill somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I remember this event happening. Were you a part of that detection part phase?
Only peripherally.
Mm-hmm. Just being in the network realm,
mm-hmm.
or network security realm. How did the network security analysts actually detect this, that this thing was going to hit at a certain time? They find a copy of this program?
Well, like you do any sort of intelligence gathering, it's trolling the networks, talking to people, getting on chat rooms and stuff like that.
Okay, and now I understand from protection, from a home user's perspective, protecting your network so that your computer doesn't take place in an assault on something else.
Mm-hmm.
That's, of course, important, making sure that you protect society as much as you can. But what about personal data? You mentioned briefly about identity theft. Can you get into that?
Oh, yeah. Well, we all keep incredible amounts on our computer, personal information on our computers. We have...
Due to some technical problems, some of the recording was lost during this segment.
Apply for a loan, apply for credit cards, and next thing you know, you have a bad credit rating because somebody's gone to Best Buy and bought $6,000 worth of electronic equipment and never paid for it.
Just how hard or how easy is it to access that information?
Oh, it's very, very easy. A lot of people don't realize the way their home computer is set up is that they have their hard drive shared to the world, especially if they're using peer-to-peer network sharing software, to swap MP3 files and stuff like that. You're effectively giving access to anybody who wants to come in and have a look at your computer.
But only to those folders that are shared out.
Well, supposedly.
Supposedly.
What do you mean, supposedly?
Somebody with the right knowledge and the right software can cause your computer to give up more information than you intended it to.
So how vulnerable is the typical Windows or Macintosh system if you just plug it onto the network, set up your DSL line, and get your always-on connection and then go off to work? Are your doors hanging wide open while you're gone?
They're pretty much hanging wide open. Mostly what people use to protect their systems is a password. And historically, they use a very bad password, and then they use that very bad password for everything.
Can you define a very bad password?
A word that can be found in the dictionary or a proper name of a place or a person or something like that. Anything that you would see on a list or in a book or something like that.
And how do you make a safe password?
Well, a safer password, not the best in the world, is if you must have a dictionary word, is split it up somewhere not obvious and put a bunch of numbers and special symbols or special characters in the middle of the word. So, say for the word security, have it SC379CU blah, 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 blah. And that's a lot easier for somebody to remember.
So kind of replacing some letters with numbers.
Right.
That represent that number somehow, like an E is a 3.
Well, you could do that, or you can. It's better just to go ahead and add additional letters or characters to the word itself, because the password cracking programs have become more intelligent, and one of the tricks they've cottoned onto quite quickly was to substitute letters or numbers for letters, like the number 1 for the letter I and that sort of thing.
So. Are you saying, okay, so they're getting better, but in general they scan for passwords that are common, and therefore they attack people that have common passwords.
Right. The password crackers will have usually a text file attached to it that has maybe a couple of 10,000-20,000 dictionary words and proper names on it, and it will very quickly match those names against what your password is until it gets a match.
Uh-huh. Now, can it do that incrementally, or is it just every submit is it's by itself?
What do you mean by incrementally?
Meaning, if my password was Red Dog and some hacking system tried to access with Red, would they be able to know that part of it was Red?
No, it would look for the whole word itself, and then if it couldn't find the whole word, then it starts doing it letter by letter. So looking for an entire word, I mean, these programs are incredibly fast. If you consider that our chips are working at millions of instructions per second.
That's for sure.
I have watched Loftcrack go through 5,000 user accounts and in less than 15 seconds come up with over 60% of the passwords on the list.
That's amazing. Do you
Do
you use these tools in checking out a network security?
Oh, definitely. Yes, whatever people are going to be using to attack your network, I would use them on my own networks to see where my vulnerabilities were.
Now, wouldn't it be a really, really sensible fix just to have computers only let you enter a password once every 30 seconds or so? That would stop all these speed attacks.
Oh, but people want convenience.
Well, more than
That's
30 seconds?
That's why we have bad passwords and we don't have fingerprint scanners on our computers. People just want to do something once and then be done with it and not be bothered.
In a high security environment, the ease of use is removed for better security. Do people have
supposedly?
Do people have thumbprint systems?
On some systems.
And how does that work?
A thumbprint?
Yeah, I mean, I understand how you get a thumbprint, but how do you make a computer understand that this peripheral can say yes or no, and that peripheral only can say yes or no?
Okay, well, you have a little pressure-sensitive, heat-sensitive pad that you would put your finger on. There's software that interfaces between that device and your computer. And when you press your finger on the pad, the computer makes a mathematical equivalent of your fingerprint. So it's not actually storing the whirls and swirls and ridges and so on. It's scanning across the print and making a mathematical equivalent, much like a PostScript can do a picture on your printer.
Sure. So then that device sends that bit of data. So it's not the device that has the authority. It's that piece of data that's actually your thumbprint, which is your password.
Right. And it's stored in a database, and it's encrypted. And every time you press your finger on the pad again, it will compare what you have just done to what was stored in the database.
Now, is there any fear of having a false sense of security? I remember stories earlier this year about a German magazine that managed to, using $2 or $3 worth of gelatin, lift fingerprints off of glasses and such and make fake fingers that fooled all the fingerprint sensors they tested. So is it that real security, or is it just something that you feel like you're protecting yourself.
Well, let me ask you this. Is a password a better security?
Probably not.
Well, conceivably,
I mean,
password.
What upsets me about the resistance to biometrics, which are like fingerprints and eye scans and so on, are people saying, well, it's not very secure. Well, look at what we're using. We're using passwords, which are horrid.
Right. What about computers just starting to resist a poor password? And also changing passwords more frequently.
Yeah, you can get software to put on a network, and I do recommend this to businesses, that will enforce strong password policies, which you can set it to say that your password must be at least 8 characters in length, contain a combination of upper and lowercase letters and numbers and special characters. And then you can also say every 30 days or every 6 months, expire that password and make somebody come up with something completely new.
But you would rather go for a biometrics environment?
Yes, simply because people, if something is easy to use, people will use it. If something is difficult to use, people will find a way to circumvent the security.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The rest of the geeks here are Sean Cleveland, Chris Dunphy, and Miles Elam just joined us. We're talking with Shay Cobb, author of Network Security for Dummies. This is Central Coast Public Radio. Shay, let's switch over to your book a little bit. Your book, Network Security for Dummies, seems accessible to the basic computer user. Do you feel that a basic computer user can understand the issues around network security?
Oh, definitely. One of the reasons I wrote the book was to dispel the myth that only Uber geeks can handle computer security. A lot of computer security is based on simple rules and common sense and has little to do with high technology. Some of the security mechanisms that we use can be very complicated and hard to understand, but the actual rules of what you need to do to secure your network aren't complicated at all.
And your idea in bringing network security to a more general forum, does that help in some way?
I hope so. Seeing as we connect to the Internet, which is the mother of all Internets, and so many businesses and as the latest virus proves, ATM machines are connected to the Internet, if the individual users are secure, that makes the entire network that much better.
Okay, that makes sense, especially from these situations of taking a computer down by mass attack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's see if you can, we'll just go right into a little bit about your, you have 8 commandments of network security. Can you start a little bit on those or your important aspects of your of the commandments of network security?
Okay, well, number one, because we use it all the time, are good passwords. Use a strong password that you're not going to find in a dictionary, and you're well on the road to good security if you're doing that. The second thing, and I really strongly suggest not only getting antivirus software, but keeping it up to date. At least weekly, if not daily, because new viruses are coming out every day.
And what do you mean up to date? I mean, can you tell us how antivirus software works?
Certainly. Antivirus software is consisted of 2 different portions. The first portion is the scanning bit that just sort of goes through and looks at all of your files and programs on your drive. And the second part is a database. And the database has bits of actual virus in it and a little bit of intelligence that contains information on how viruses work. So you scan through your computer and it compares what it's seeing against the database. You know, does this bit of code actually match a bit of virus code, or is the behavior of this program match the behavior of any known viruses or suspected viruses? And if you get a match, then it will quarantine the file or the program or delete it, depending on how you've got it set up. So that database has to have the most current information.
So it's a little bit like a vaccine in that you have to get it before you get the virus.
Oh, absolutely, yes. If you get it afterwards, then you've got an enormous cleanup, mop-up to do.
Now, why do you make that so high on your list, virus protection?
Because they're so easy to get. I recently scanned my mother-in-law's computer and found it was riddled with viruses.
Wow.
293 instances of
different
viruses
or partially different
most
viruses?
Of it was the same virus.
Which virus was that?
Now you've asked me that, it sounds completely out of my head.
It's okay, it doesn't matter. In any case, you found tons of viruses on, I'm assuming your mother-in-law is not a, is not a professional?
Some of these viruses are actually taking files at random from your computer and mailing them off to complete strangers. I myself have received business plans from complete strangers because they got a virus on their machine, and it took that file and said, okay, who am I going to send it to? And the virus looked through the machine and, you know, maybe found my email address on a cached website.
Do you find that any operating systems or programs are more susceptible to viruses than others?
Oh, well, unfortunately, Windows are just sort of the Swiss cheese when it comes to viruses. I love Macs. I think Macs are absolutely fabulous, especially the new OX X, which is built on OpenBSD. And not only is it based on a very nice, secure Unix platform, they've gone 10 steps further and made the implementation, the setup of their Unix even more secure.
How so?
Well, there are little programs in Unix that can run in the background and you don't know about it. They're called daemons. And Apple has turned off these daemons. They realize that most people don't need these things running, so they go ahead and turn them off. And
so as it comes installed, it just has a lot of things disabled. It,
by default, these little daemons are turned off.
Rather than the other way around of having everything on and therefore being a security risk.
That's correct,
right away.
Yeah. When I was doing research for my book and looking for problems with Macs, I was really hard-pressed to come up with a complete chapter for problems with the Mac.
Now, is that just because there's a lot less people writing security breach software for the Mac?
That's partially true. Another thing is that there aren't as many software programs for the Mac, and people don't know as much about coding for the Mac as they do for Windows. Windows is made very easy to program for. We have drag and drop C, and you can create a program and not even know what you're doing. It's a lot more difficult to create a program for a Macintosh.
Well, I guess, and that's a good spec. That lack of ease is good for security. Is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in effect, yeah. I'm sure if the hacker community decided to go after Macs, put all those minds behind it, they would come up with some really good tools for hacking Macs. But basically, they haven't been interested, so they haven't done it.
You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Chris Dunphy, and Miles Elam. We've been talking with author and network security expert Shay Cobb. If you would like to join the discussion, you may call 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is Central Coast Public Radio. KOSP co-sponsors the benefit art auction, Hearts for the Arts. This fundraiser supports work of the Cultural Council, keeping the arts alive in Santa Cruz County. This evening, tomorrow evening, features more than 300 pieces of art and live and silent auction, and treats from local chefs and wineries. The event takes place on Saturday, tomorrow evening, at the 8th at 5 p.m. at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium. For more information, call 688-5399 or the Cultural Council of Santa Cruz County's website at www.ccscc.org. You are listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We are talking network security with Shay Cobb and geeks Sean Cleveland, Chris Dunphy, and Miles Elam. Please join our discussion by calling 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877.
This is Miles Elam, bringing you a Geek Bit. Bits, bytes, kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes, petabytes, exabytes.
You hear these names whenever you look at RAM and hard drives for your computer and compact flash cards for your camera. And you know that they refer to the amount of data that can be stored, but how much is each one really? Let's start with the smallest one, a bit. A bit is like an on-off switch in your home. It is either on or off, true or false, one or zero. Whenever you see a computer expert on television or the movies looking at a bunch of ones and zeros, you are looking at bits, more or less. Put several bits together, and you've got a byte. Okay, now we put 8 bits together to make 1 byte. But what does that get us? Well, if 1 bit can hold 2 values, 1 and 0, then 2 bits can hold 4 values, 2 times 2. 3 bits can hold 8 values, 2 times 2 times 2. Put 8 of them together, and you have enough possibilities to hold every item on your keyboard, including the alphabet, both uppercase and lowercase characters. So now, you can just think of each byte as a letter. A kilobyte is 1,000 bytes, 1,000 letters. A megabyte is 1 million letters. A gigabyte is 1 billion. A terabyte is 1 trillion, followed by petabytes and exabytes. Easy, huh? Now, if you figure that the average word has 6 letters, then it would take 6 bytes of space in your hard drive to store that word. So if you see a picture on your hard drive that's 6 kilobytes, you can honestly say that the picture is worth 1,000 words.
This GeekBit is brought to you by the Geeks of GeekSpeak, Friday mornings at 9 on Central Coast Public Radio.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Tronsell. We're talking about network security with Shay Cobb and Geeks Sean Cleveland, Chris Dunphy, and Miles Elam. Please join our discussion by calling 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're going to go right into phone calls, I believe, because we are stacked. Colleen from Carmel, hello, and welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi there. So I have a question. A couple of questions, but I guess you have a lot of calls. This is a big issue.
No, it's
Twitter. I have two little laptops, and a company that I do work with has networked me without having to.
Two laptops network together?
Well, actually, my two personal laptops, when I take it into her office, I just turn them on, and all of a sudden, I'm connected to her computers.
Okay. So what's your concern?
Well, my concern is a couple of things. Does that mean that any other, I can't think what it's called. It doesn't have to be plugged in. It just happens.
A wireless network.
Thank you. A wireless network. That wasn't so technical. But so anybody else who has a wireless network in that vicinity, Would it still be hooked up?
Shay, do you want to field this?
Certainly. Wireless networks are
do you know I can't
problem.
Hear?
Okay.
It would depend on how the access point has been configured, and I can't hear you very clearly, but this is a corporate environment?
Well, it's a business environment.
A business environment,
yeah.
Right. So you would have to ask the IT people how they've set up the configuration for the access point for wireless.
Colleen, are there IT people in this business environment?
IT people are.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Information technology.
I'm sorry. I'm really.
It's okay.
Network
resident
people?
Geeks.
Are there resident geeks at this business environment?
No, there are no geeks. I understand that.
Okay.
There are not. He
oh
comes
dear.
In.
Well then, I highly recommend that your boss or somebody in authority get my book and go through the chapter on wireless security.
Great, I'll do it.
Because there are a number of things that you need to do to secure wireless networks, because they're wonderful. I have one at home, but if you do not implement the security on them, and they have no security by default, then anybody walking by your building or sitting outside your office with a wireless card in their laptop can hop onto your network and conceivably get your data.
That's exactly what I was afraid of. I've gone to laptops because I'm not comfortable, and I know nothing, I'm ignorant totally, but I'm not comfortable with my desktop, like you say, is always plugged into something. And I'm concerned about people coming in. I just have a small business, and I don't want to, you know, I worry about the security. But my two laptops are connected by wireless, or supposedly are. So is that a problem also?
Yes.
Yeah,
I
want to give an example of the, a real-world example of wireless security. I was setting my parents up with a wireless network over Christmas,
yeah.
And as I was setting theirs up with my laptop, I noticed their neighbor's network, and I recognized the kind of router they were using, and the router still had the default password, so I logged on to my parents' neighbor's router, and I could have totally taken over their network because they hadn't changed the default password. The default password was, I think, login or Linksys or something.
Admin.
Admin was it, yes.
Yes, that's the one that they use it there.
Yes, so change that.
Yeah, how can I make my computer safe? My personal laptop.
You're going to need the manual for the wireless network that you're using, because that will have information about how they are implementing security for that particular vendor. And then you also need my book.
Okie dokie.
Colleen, thank you for the call.
Yes, thanks. Bye-bye.
You know, Shay, implementing security on a wireless router or gateway is not an easy thing.
Unfortunately, it's not. I'm hoping the Wi-Fi Alliance, with their new recommendations, that the vendors will pick up on this and it will be safer, you know, hopefully by the end of the year.
Yeah, I hope so.
Chris from Monterey, what about antivirus software would you like to talk about today?
Well, I just got a new computer, and I got an antivirus software package, McAfee, and I also just got hooked up to the Internet by cable modem. So I guess what I want to know is it gives me a security index, and it asks me for updates, but it doesn't automatically. There's a antivirus index, an anti-hacker index, an anti-abuse index, an anti-spam index.
But how do you update those indexes?
Well, just by clicking on them and going to updates. You know, at McAfee over the Internet. But if a file comes in, it won't automatically scan that file. I guess that's my question. I need to be, you know, there's supposed to be a firewall, personal firewall, but whenever something comes in, it asks me to save it to my hard drive.
Chris, what's the name of this software?
McAfee Security Center.
Shay, can you reference that and speak to that?
Okay. It's very difficult to sort of give you generic information on that. I think your best bet would be to contact the technical support people for McAfee. They are very good and very knowledgeable. When you buy a new computer, the software that comes with it has been installed months ago. So it needs updating right away because the information that in the databases is old. You do want it to store that information to your hard drive so that the software can work. But if you're unsure as to what is happening, I would suggest either getting on the phone to McAfee or sending them an email, even checking out their website to see if they have an FAQ or something.
Shay, in general, does McAfee's software have a scanning part to it?
They all do. Yes, they do.
Okay, so most likely it is scanning, or that part of it just needs to be enabled.
Right. Oh, it is scanning. I'm just wondering if it scans. It won't scan something automatically. I mean, if I bring it in.
Usually the type of software you get free with a computer is.
Oh, I paid for this when I got the computer.
Down version. You'll have to go to the website or to your computer store to buy a more robust version. On the other hand, I recommend a free antivirus, which I've been using for years, and I think it's just fabulous. It's called AVG, like A like Apple, V like Victor, G like George.
And it's free?
It's free.
Where do you get that?
I knew you were going to ask that. At grissoft.com, GRISOFT. And it's free for home users, and they charge businesses a small fee to use it.
But you recommend getting that, and of course you can find that on Google, probably.
Exactly, yes.
If I could ask one more quick question. Sometimes the little windows pop up and tell me that some type of software is trying to connect with my computer and not, and do I want... Sometimes it says McAfee recognizes it, and sometimes it says it doesn't. And I have the option to not have it connect. And is that something to really worry about, or is that, I mean, it's nice that it lets me know, but sometimes it can be an inconvenience.
Well, it sounds like McAfee's firewall is set up and enabled, and what is happening is that this program is detecting little questions from the network, from the Internet that are coming to your computer, And you're right in saying, no, I don't want it to connect. It's okay for you to connect outwards, but you don't want anything coming into your computer connecting inwards.
Of course, there are situations where you do, and like if you're using an instant messenger system, sometimes those actually connect to each other, and you could get a, you know, Yahoo instant messenger is trying to connect, and that's the question of whether you want to choose to or not. And if you choose no, then you'll just have problems with that one piece of program.
Right, but is that as dangerous as, say, downloading a virus? Having somebody could connect up to your machine that's not.
Well, one of the connections that might be being tried to made is somebody might be trying to connect to file sharing on your computer to upload stuff from your hard drive.
Okay.
So you got to watch out.
Yeah, it could be a serious attack. It might not be, and that's why the computer's saying, "What do you want to do with it? This software's doing. What do you want to do with it?" So you want to make the decision as intelligently as you can. If you say no a lot and some program is not working the way you expect, then maybe you want to be saying yes a little bit more. But that's something that you want to kind of assess by yourself for yourself. To make sure that you're being as secure as you can.
Right.
Saying yes every time is bad. Saying no every time is probably going to be really frustrating.
Right. Okay.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you for your program. Thanks.
Maria from Carmel Valley. Hi. Welcome.
Hi. Yes, my question is similar to the last in that I do a lot of library online research from libraries, and often I find I have to lower my firewall down to a setting that I would really prefer not to use, just to have to be able to get the information into my computer that I need. And I wondered if you could just discuss firewalls in general and what you recommend and the different types of firewalls, those personal firewalls as opposed to others on the other types. Okay.
Well, again, I recommend a free utility. It's called Zone Alarm, and that's available at zonelabs.com. A firewall, again, is similar to an antivirus program in that it contains software that detects something, and in this case, it's looking at connections coming to your computer and going out, and it compares it to a database of information of things that may or may not be harmful to your computer. That's why they come back and they ask you questions. Zone Alarm, when you first install it, is going to be asking you, you know, do you want Internet Express to connect to the Internet? Well, obviously, yes, you want it to connect so that you can do web surfing. I have found problems with this program sometimes going to different sites.
You're talking about Zone Alarm?
With Zone Alarm.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also been able to go to, again, their support desk, their technical help, and get help with resetting the software so that I could work better with it.
You're able to go to technical support on a program that's free?
Yes.
Please explain.
Well, again, they're supported by products that they do sell. They sell to corporate. They have upgraded software. You can get Zone Alarm for free, or you can get Zone Alarm Pro by paying, I don't know, $50 or something like that. So they do generate income, and that's how they support themselves.
But they also support the free program?
Yes, they do.
That's great. I love that. Maria, is that enough help for you?
Yes. Well, is it, and in some cases, I guess, just to be able to download information, say, from a library, you just have to lower the fire alarm, the firewall for that time?
Yeah, occasionally I have to do that myself, and it's a judgment call on your part. Do you trust that the library that you're connecting to is really who you think they are? If you suspect that they're not, then I wouldn't download the program. But if it's some educational institution or some place that you go to a lot and you've never had any problems with them, then I don't see any problem with lowering your firewall to do that.
Now, does Zone Alarm actually say, well, you're trying to do something, you sure you want to do it, and then you can say yes or no? Or
yes.
You actually have. Okay, so that's what you're talking about lowering it, is that you just
sometimes you have to turn
quickly.
The firewall off completely.
Wow. So it really takes a bit of management to run firewall and in general be more secure.
Yes, well that's the case whether you have a free firewall such as Zone Alarm, or in a business sense you have something like CyberGuard. There are times that you have to lower the defenses in order to make something work because of the way that computers communicate.
Maria, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Crystal from La Salva Beach, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Well, I want to go to a much more elemental type of question. I'm not a geek. I'm extremely basic. I'm just a PC user, and I have the McAfee that was installed in my 2000 Windows that's been there all along and nothing else. So I would just like to know what would be the wisest and smartest first step to take towards getting an antivirus. Would it be going into that free site and looking at that, or is there some other thing that we would recommend doing? And yes, I do plan on checking out her book because I think that's a good idea.
Very good.
I'd like to know the basic first step for me. Is that clear enough?
That's totally fair, Shay.
The first step, yeah, go ahead and get AVG antivirus. Like I said, I have no problem recommending it. I've used it myself for years. And I set it up to scan every night, like about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and update the newest virus definitions.
Now, I don't leave my computer on all the time. I turn it off.
Don't.
So what would be the best way to set it up for that kind of thing?
I set up my virus protection software to do it at boot time, and sometimes I'll skip that and do it when I'm finishing my session. So before I close the machine down, you just run it. You know, go grab a drink of water and come back, and it'll be done, and then you can go ahead and shut your machine down. Just try to do that every time you start and stop, and also have it set up to be in the middle of the night, because if you have it set up in the middle of the night and you happen to be on, it will run.
Well, I do actually have that set up currently now, and I haven't done it in so long. Is there a question that asks about setting it up for start and to quit, or does it say boot time, or what does it say?
Shay? I'm sorry, I
didn't hear that.
AVG software, does it allow you to say right before shutting down the machine, please run it?
I believe so. There are a number of different options you can set up for it.
Okay, it asks you, in other words.
You can do it manually as well and say, go ahead and start now.
But yes, when you install, you can also set it up, or you go into the preferences of that system and set up the times when it will run. And, of course, the more frequent, the safer. Shay, does this software, AVG, does it support scanning the SMTP, or sorry, the email coming in?
Yes, it does. And when I get my emails, it will stamp my emails. This has been scanned and found virus-free.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
Okay. So that would be the recommended first step.
Yes, Crystal, good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Tim from the school district. Welcome.
Howdy.
Hi.
This may be a little bit out of the scope of this show, which, by the way, I do enjoy very much. We are a fairly large school district. We have 12 school sites, 8,000 students, and we're looking at implementing a wireless solution district-wide. And this is not between the school sites. It's actually just on the school lands. Presently, our wired lands we have set up with DHCP, and understand we have to constantly be dealing with the difference between security and ease of use. If, your guest said, if it's not easy, then teachers and students won't be using it. And that's our goal, is for people to use it. But also we have some security issues. But what my question is basically, in setting up a wireless solution where students will be using laptops, teachers will be using laptops, we want it to be out on the campus, not just in the classrooms as well. But we don't want other people from around in the community to just easily jump on our network. And being DHCP set up for all of our wired clients, we figure DHCP is not a good solution for these wireless. But at the same time, we don't want to have a static IP for every laptop that's out there, because then we have to deal with assigning those and duplicate IP addresses, et cetera.
Shay, can you address this issue?
There's a number of things you can do, and as I mentioned before, you're definitely going to need the manual in this case to see how to set it up. One thing that wireless networks do is that they broadcast their name all the time, and that's called an SSID, the service set identifier. And by default, that's set usually to like a manufacturer's name, like Linksys or 3Com or something. So initially you need to change that, because, you know, every hacker, you know, every kid in the world knows what those default names are. And that, in effect, is just sort of masking...
what type of wireless system you're running.
Yeah, the name of your network. Another thing you can do is that all computers have something called a MAC address, and that is a hard-coded hexadecimal address that has nothing to do with the IP at all. So you can create a database of the MAC addresses of all the laptops and say only these MAC addresses are allowed to use the wireless access.
So each laptop that had a wireless card would have to register the MAC address.
That's correct.
But in a wireless environment, couldn't someone just be sniffing the airwaves and see what the MAC addresses that are common are and then go ahead and start using that?
You could do. You could also enable WEP, which is Wired Equivalent Privacy, which is a very light form of encryption. It can be cracked, but you know most people don't bother with it. They'll go for something easy. And then require each of the laptops to use this authentication and WEP to connect. And that way somebody can still sniff the traffic, but what they're going to get is garbage.
Right, and they have to decide what to try to crack, and then they might only get some partial packet and have trouble with it.
Uh-huh.
Tim, did that help?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim, for calling. We have Rhea from Scotts Valley Wireless Network at Home. Hi, Rhea. Welcome.
Hi there. Are you ready for my question?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Sorry. I recently set up a tiny home wireless network to connect my partner's machine and mine, and I use a Linksys wireless router. I'm at work right now, so I don't have the model number available, and then he's got the NAC card. And I was told that Linksys router provided some firewall protection, and I'm wondering if you can tell me whether it's likely to be enough or whether I need to go acquire more firewall protection. I have a DSL connection.
Chris Dunphy, you want to handle this?
Most of the little home personal routers, the kind of firewall that they provide is called a NAT firewall. It does network address translation, so that your internal home network is actually not on the internet. There's only just the router on the internet, and then it's only the outgoing connections you make can come back in.
Right. So, I was told that was how this works.
Right. And so that is a fairly effective kind of defense against things on the network.
Shay, do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I do. Linksys, by default, I think, has the remote management turned on, which gives you a web interface to add more things and
definitely take a look at that web interface.
Firewall. Excuse me?
And definitely take a look at that web interface.
Yeah, you need to change the default password for that and maybe turn off remote management.
All right. Thank you, Rhea, for the phone call. Gabe from Pacific Grove, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, I tuned in fairly late, and I'm enjoying your program very much, but I have a question about email clients. You know, many of us use Outlook Express. Is there anything better for Windows in terms of security and, you know, privacy or anything like that?
Shay, the question was, is there anything better than Outlook Express?
Oh, definitely.
Of course.
Is there anything worse than Outlook Express?
I don't know.
Maybe Outlook.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Outlook Express is actually a little bit better than Outlook, I think. Personally, I use Eudora.
Eudora.
Which, again, you can get it for free. You'll have to suffer through some banner ads if you want to use the free version. Or you can upgrade and pay a little bit of money and have the full version. There are security settings for Outlook and Outlook Express that you can set to increase security. Or you can go to a program like Eudora and also use their security settings.
Now, do you think that Eudora is one of the more secure email clients?
I don't know if it's actually more secure. I like the security settings on it. Like, I can turn off HTML mail. I can tell it not to preview my messages, which immediately opens them, whether you realize it or not, and not to launch any attachments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are good features in the email client. Anyone should set up their email client to do that, even if you are using Outlook. Gabe, did that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, thanks. I'm going to look into Eudora.
Great. Thank you, Gabe, for the call.
Bye.
And Shay, is there anything else you want to address before we sign off for the day?
Well, yes, there's one more thing. When you get your new computer or you've got an old computer and, you know, it's sitting on your desk, by default, the operating system, and unfortunately I'm talking Windows again, has a lot of security holes in it. So Windows has this feature called Windows Update, and it will go to the Microsoft website, which will scan your computer and look to see which security software you need to be put on your system. And I recommend that people do that weekly because, again, there's almost weekly problems with Microsoft products. And go ahead and download the software, and that will patch a lot of the security holes that hackers use to get into your systems.
Okay, so important thing, when you get your computer, start thinking about security in the very beginning.
Right.
Yeah, that's good. All right. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. This is GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Shay Cobb, thank you very much for joining us today on GeekSpeak.
Oh, well, thank you, Lyle and Sean and Chris and Miles, and it's been great.
All right.
Thank you.
Shay Cobb's book, Network Security for Dummies, is available all over the place. It's yellow and black, and you don't have to be a dummy to use it or rely on it. It's a very good reference book. Geeks, Chris Dunphy, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Shay.
Good to be an hour.
Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, also answering the phones today. And for all those that called in, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that?
Later today on This American Life.
I've never really seen a dead body like that.
A teenager raised here in America returns with his dad to their home country, Afghanistan.
And this is the first time I realized how going through a war must change you, because my dad actually touched his face and was like, oh, I see there's been wounded here and here. I think I'll age about 5 years in these 3 months.
This American Life, airing at 7 p.m. tonight, here on KUSP Central Coast Public Radio.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Alder, or on the web at kusp.org. This has been GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned for Fine Print.